This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Positively Revolting. This morning, Joe Uris will guest host and speak with Leah Nagasi, director and co-founder of Prepare Portland, coming up next, right after these announcements. This KBOO program has been possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Wonder Ballroom, presenting New Orleans bounce rapper Big Frida next Friday, July 19th. Big Frida tickets on sale now at this 21 and over show and at the door on Friday.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival, July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Featuring over 50 electronic and dance artists, including Purity Ring, A-Track, RJD2, and Tycho, as well as on-site art installations, a hookah lounge, and splash pool. That's July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Tickets on sale now at whatthefestival.com.
On Friday, July 19th, from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., tune in for KBOO's one-day flash drive fundraiser, a day filled with news and music from the equator to Antarctica.
Lecture topics will include climate change, gay rights, and an overview of African land grabs. Don't miss out on the chance to explore underrepresented music and news from across the Southern Hemisphere on July 19th from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Good morning. Hey, I'm sitting in for Ani Haynes, and this is Positively Revolting. And it's normally, I would say, a show that focuses on issues that are familiar to all of us, but also includes a large audience of women, which is unfortunately not true of talk radio in general. We are going to be talking today with Leah Nagasi.
Nagasi.
And we're going to be talking about something, I don't know what it is. We're going to talk about something really weird. That's very unfair. That's so unfair. I'm sorry. We're going to be talking about a program that has shows up in several cities and that is basically, I would say, a way of approaching the problems that people face in all kinds of situations, domestic, public, private, that are violent or potentially violent or threatening of violence. And we were with the director and founder of Prepare Portland, which is a very grand name.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Prepare Portland. And I guess what I would like you to do, Leah, is just to tell us what this thing is.
Absolutely. So I can take you through it from A to Z.
Please, please do that.
We are ultimately a violence prevention program, and we do that through self-defense training in large part and also a lot of workshops with corporations, agencies, individuals. We do all kinds of programming. And well, most people hear self-defense and they think of martial arts.
Hi-ya!
Right. That is what most people think of. And the truth is we were founded originally 40 plus years ago at this point by a group of people who were martial artists themselves and realized that what they were teaching was not actually practical for women's self-defense. So this is about 1972. They looked at their program and said, well, we have some things that would work well. And there are a lot of other things that don't work well. And at that time, they study police reports. They talk to sociologists. They talk to offenders. They talk to survivors. They interviewed therapists. They got personal accounts and figured out a lot of things. And we thank them for their work. They learned that women were attacked differently than men.
What do you mean by attack differently?
So a lot of people, if you think about martial arts, it's starting face-to-face, you're standing up.
Yeah.
What they found was that as far as stranger attacks often happened, women were grabbed from behind. And so that's a difference. They looked at how people were built, and women and men are built very differently. As much as when I was an eighth grader and thought my arm muscles were as big as the guys at the same time, now I look at our students and I look at ourselves and I say, well, we women carry a lot of our strength in our hips and our legs. Men carry their strength in the upper body. We mm-hmm. are different in that way. So a lot of the physical techniques that you'll see us do in our experiential classes are based on our strength, using a student's strengths against an assailant's weaknesses.
Which is sort of like Aikido, kinda.
No, it's quite different. Well, I don't know. I don't know a ton about Aikido, but I've seen enough to know that it's quite different from what we do.
Okay, you're going to have to lead me through this because
I'm totally
ignorant.
That's quite all right. So when you see Aikido or when you see any kind of martial art, mm-hmm. they're beautiful and it is an art. They are called martial arts. Mm-hmm. They are not necessarily meant for practical, real-world self-defense. At this point, 40 years into this work, there's a whole mythological origin story that was about the assault of a black belt martial artist. And so that got told, and at this point, it's too far to tell if that is founded in truth or not. So that's why we don't really necessarily talk about that in how this program started. But I think that there is something to that. We've had students and people who have become instructors over the years throughout the country who are black belt martial artists of various kinds, different arts. And they find something in our program that is quite different from what they've experienced in their art. Conditioning is another thing. So social conditioning, and I know you're going to like this part. Social conditioning, when a lot of women brought up in this country are told to be nice. Be nice. Protect that person's feelings. Don't hurt their feelings. Don't say anything mean. And so where that leads us is to a place of putting our safety aside, putting our gut instincts aside, putting our survival instincts aside often in order to protect someone else's feelings. For men, because now our classes are also taught to men and children. So for men, often the conditioning is, well, you should know how to fight. Don't walk away from a fight. And as one of our instructors says, our male instructor says, I didn't know how to fight. I wasn't brought up that way. And I didn't know if I wanted to. I didn't want to. So where did that leave me? So we challenge a lot of that social conditioning and really allow people to think about their safety and the safety of others first. And lastly, and this is the most, maybe the most exciting part, state-dependent training, adrenalized training.
Wait, adrenalized training?
Adrenalized training. And people say, well, how do you get your students adrenalized? And I say, we have them walk out onto the mat. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much to get people adrenalized. But there is a very unique thing that happens with our brains when we're adrenalized. And our brain opens up and is responsive and absorbent in a way that it's not in our normal state. So it takes in that information. In cases of trauma, that works against us because the trauma can sink a little bit deeper into our brain. But in the case of our classes and our programs, it's an advantage because our brains open up and are receptive to this new information. Often we're retraining our bodies and our minds what to do when we are in what feels like an emergency situation. And sometimes maybe and sometimes may not be, as far as our own personal safety. For example, after I first took my training, I witnessed a car accident. Actually, I didn't even witness it. I heard it. I woke up to the sound of it. Mm-hmm. And immediately I was adrenalized. And instead of lying there in bed and being frozen and thinking, what was that? I was up and out of bed. I looked out the window, saw what it was, grabbed the phone, was able to dial 911, walk out to the scene to assess it. And all of that with calm confidence instead of just a heightened
So this whole thing is called IMPACT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are those initials for something?
They're not. It was...
Okay, good, because I was going to be...
I is for important.
No. M is for my mother. I appreciate the idea of this. I'm going to tell a story about my childhood, okay?
I'm ready.
It'll make you cry. It's just so sad. When I was... first of all... For every person in our culture, and I think in most cultures out in the industrialized world, adolescence is a terrible time in many ways. Our bodies are changing, our feelings are changing, our sense, unless we are highly attuned mesomorphs or something, you know, athletes or something, our sense of vulnerability,
absolutely,
both physical and psychological, is very high. So I was in the eighth or ninth grade, and there was a bully in my school. And he, in front of everybody, kind of confronted me and was sort of slapping me around. And I had no aside from the most negative adrenal response, I had no real response. I was good with my mouth. I could talk. But against that force, I had nothing going on. Now, I think back to that and I think, well, what if I had some kind of skill, and I'm not talking about Taekwondo or Aikido or something like
right.
that. I had some kind of skill to confront him or at least neutralize his attack so that no matter what happened, I'd feel good about it rather than feeling, as I'm now describing it, traumatized.
Absolutely.
So is this the sort of a situation you're talking about?
It's one of many situations that we talk about. Absolutely. When you shared that story, immediately what came in my mind was a friend's daughter who took our children's class, and she loved it and felt extremely empowered by it. And the key was that she was one time on the school bus, and she witnessed another child, and she was about 9 or 10 at the time, another child just ridiculing someone that she knew. And I don't know that it was a particularly close friend, but she saw this and she stood up for that person. So essentially it was a type of bystander intervention and said, leave them alone, and stood up for them. And the person backed down. So you said you had your words, you were good with words. And that's absolutely a key part of our program, is using words and setting appropriate boundaries. And what we find is that because people in our experiential programs, because people have had their physical skills, they've upped them and they feel efficacious in those, they are able to use their verbal boundaries. Because anytime you hear anything, people say, well, tell someone to go away, say no, this and that. I know as a woman, before I took this class, it was always in the back of my head. Yeah, I said that, but in the back of my head, well, what if they don't go away? What if they don't hear my words? And so in having those skills behind me now, I realize I can use these words confidently, with true confidence, and not, it's hard to act confident when you don't feel confident.
Sure.
When you don't trust your skills, it's very hard. So I think it's put out to a lot of people to do that, and it's a challenge. So at any rate, this child intervened and stopped that. And I think also empowered that child to be able to stand up for, I believe it was a boy, himself later.
Okay, I want to tell people, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is a show traditionally called Positively Revolting, which I think is a great title. And we're talking with Leah Nagase, and we're talking about a program that equips people to deal with the stresses and confrontational aspects of our society on a one-on-one or personal way. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the overall culture of violence that seems to permeate our society on so many levels, in terms of both our gaming and our fiction and our sports and our wars and our politics. You want to call, you want to join the conversation, 231-8187. That's 231-8187. Ask people to maybe keep their calls short so we can have as many callers as possible. And I don't think any question's out of bounds, but I want to emphasize here, we're not talking about the technologies or the skills of the sports of confrontational fighting. Of, you know, we're not talking about boxing, we're not talking about wrestling, we're not talking about various Eastern martial arts. We're talking about both a psychological and a physical training that equips ordinary people, men, women, children, to deal with confrontational situations or implied confrontations that come up in life. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. And I think the biggest change from 40 years ago to now, besides the development of the suit being more than...
Oh, wait, the suit, yes.
Oh, the suit, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we got to get to the suit.
So the biggest development, though, over the past 40 years has been the development of the boundaries work and looking at healthy relationships and setting healthy boundaries, because in physically violent situations, it doesn't often start, we can't say never, it doesn't often start with a physical assault, a physical or sexual assault. It often starts with a minor boundary violation. And I think that's something you and I were talking about.
Yeah, and then when one doesn't block that, or one's not sure what exactly is going on.
Where your boundaries are.
Right.
And then how to set them and how to enforce them.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm interested in this on a lot of levels. I see... this is something you don't need to agree with, but I see this nation as fundamentally a bully nation. We have an enormous power. We have a huge, the biggest military system at our beck and call. It often doesn't serve us well. We're seeing the nation expanding and spending its treasure in adventures all over the world, and it's just become kind of our custom since World War II. And we see that this has implications in our ordinary lives. When I was a kid, there were lots of World War II movies, and then there was science fiction, and then there were all these various ways in which I, as a boy, and I assume women, girls as well, are learning that the only first of all, it's all fictional, so the only response is deadly. Essentially, one has to break arms, one has to bust faces, one has to shoot, kill, maim, whatever. And that is not a very useful way of approaching the ordinary exchanges that are violative. And I also have another thought. I think men are trained in our society in relation to young women or women to be aggressive. There's both the biological imperative,
yes,
reproductive imperative, whatever you want to call it, but there's also a tolerance that women are supposed to allow.
Yes.
When guys kid around, they don't jump sexual. They don't get personal in a certain kind of violative way. And some men, will test women in exactly those ways. They'd never try that with a guy, even if they were gay. They'd never try it because it wouldn't be tolerated. But women are taught, I think, in our society to either not be clear or even be pleased by the aggression that's implied there. And I want to know how you deal with that cultural stuff.
Well, this is a great question, and I think we can launch into a lot of different areas right now. But what comes to mind immediately is that when we are talking about boundaries and when we are teaching people how to tap into what their boundaries are and mm-hmm. how to set them, a huge part of it is that boundaries are flexible. They're flexible in that they're gray. They're a gray area. Mm-hmm. So boundaries can change from day to day, person to person, situation to situation. And certainly my boundaries with one person are going to be very different from my boundaries with another person. So really it comes down to, what do you feel uncomfortable with?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are going to be some women who maybe don't feel threatened by that at all and do like it. And then there are going to be others who immediately, and like you said, it can be absolutely a very minor, tiny thing, and they feel very threatened and unsafe by that. So it's really empowering them to set those boundaries for themselves and decide where their own boundaries lie.
Okay, before we go any further, I think it would be useful to our listeners if you could tell us how people can contact you and contact your organization. And also, if there's websites or whatever, can you give us that?
Absolutely. Our website is www.prepareportland.org. And forgive the format. It will be brand new and shiny in about 3 weeks or so.
So you're rebuilding your website.
We're rebuilding our website. We're making it look pretty.
Okay. pretty is nice.
Pretty is nice, but you'll find information on there. You'll find our class schedule on there, mm-hmm. phone number, email address, email prepareportland@gmail.com. And we have a lot of classes coming up this summer, which is very exciting. We have our basics class, which is mixed gender, 14 and up, which is coming up July 19th, 20th, and 21st. We have our next children's class, August 12th and 13th for grades 1 through 5. We have a parent caregiver workshop coming up. I believe that's August 15th. It's on the website. Mm-hmm. And that's for parents and caregivers who usually have children who are too young for a children's class, but we're responsible for our children's safety. So how can we keep them safe? And how can we talk to them about these issues? How can we advocate for them? What kinds of questions can we ask about the people that they're around? And then we have our advanced class coming up for our alumni.
Well, what is it? What is advanced?
Advanced, you're confused. It's all overwhelming.
Yes, it is. It's so scary. let's parse it down to some stuff. What do you do? I come in, okay?
Yes.
I'm an older guy.
Yes.
I'm tired of taking CRAP, you know. Enough is enough. But I don't want to, you know, I don't actually want to undergo the grueling efforts of a martial arts sport.
Right.
And I don't really want to turn into muscle man.
Yep.
So I walk in and I say, I need to know how to handle situations which can become very intimidating to me or others. And I need to know how to do that in a way that is not non-violent exactly, but not necessarily violent.
Absolutely.
So what do you do with me?
Well, we welcome you into class. We have a good mix of both talking and physical instruction. So mm-hmm. as soon as you're thinking, I'm feeling like maybe I need to move my body, we are moving our bodies. And as soon as you're feeling like I need a little break and I maybe just need to go back to using my brain, we go back to that point. So the class, and I'm speaking mostly about our basics class, our public classes.
Sure.
And the great thing is that our classes bond together. So within a few hours, it is a supportive environment, not just from the instructors to the students, but the students are supporting each other. As far as the physical techniques that we end up teaching you, it's bit by bit. So first you see a demonstration mm-hmm. of that particular technique or that set of techniques. Then we're learning how to do that. It's broken down. There's instruction. Then we are doing that in the air. Then we are using pads to strike against. Then we are using our techniques against the suit. And this is
where wait, but the suit.
The suit. We didn't go back to the suit.
I really am so attracted to the suit. You've got to tell us about that particular
thing.
So there
is a suit. Our suited instructors, as we call them, which at our chapter are all male, but in Israel they have several female.
Wait, female this is suits. An international phenomenon.
It's international. Yeah.
Okay.
It's international. So the suit that the suit instructors wear is a blend of basically soft, hard, soft. You have soft material on the inside to protect the instructor. Mm-hmm. You have then a hard layer between to absorb some of the impact. And then you have another soft layer to protect the student. So when you first see it, it looks like, I think people call it a spaceman suit because there's a giant silver head with a lot of duct tape. Mm-hmm. There's a big bulky body. It looks silly when you first see it. And it's amazing how quickly people learn to see that as, I'm not sure about this situation, and are trusting of both the instructor and his training and the co-teacher, the female instructor's guidance in being able to be free with that. It allows students to use all of their force without getting hurt and without hurting the instructor.
So I can, if I'm really upset and frustrated in the situation, I can punch the suit rather than punching the person?
Right. Well, you wouldn't punch because punching ends up breaking your fingers, but the strikes that we teach you that will keep your body safe, yes, you can use all of your impact. And it's only when you're threatened. It's when the safe distance is closed and you know that the threat is imminent. That's when you're using it. So you're not moving in towards somebody else in an effort to start a fight. It's all in response.
Okay, I think we already have one caller. Can we get that person? Sean, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I really support everything you're talking about, but I noticed about a month ago there was a study in the news that said something about that it was actually wrong to teach children to share. And
oh, yes.
My initial response to that was like, you know, kind of shock and horror. But
wait a minute, share what? I'm sorry, share.
Oh, just share in general.
Oh, okay.
The study was saying that if you teach children to share, then some children will learn a sense of entitlement, quote unquote. So, you know, I was initially shocked and horrified, but then, you know, if you take the logic of a free market capitalist society, I get the feeling that the people who are fighting bullying are actually fighting a losing battle, kind of like what you were getting at earlier. In that, like, you know, the people that live in the West Hills and, you know, West Lynn, they have a sense of entitlement. They believe they live there because of, based on merit, based on working harder or working smarter, whereas the people who live in Gresham live there, you know, because they were either lazy or stupid or whatever. It just seems like the whole society is sort of deteriorating into a kind of social Darwinism. And so, to teach children, you know, the golden rule and so forth, it's almost like you're making them vulnerable to this sort of nightmarish deterioration of our society.
Yeah, Leo, what do you say to that? Because he's suggesting an institutional or even cultural set of assumptions. Now, I'm not going to assume that people who are in the West Hills feel thus and so, and people in the West Lynn feel thus and so, or Gresham otherwise. But let's take the stereotype that's been presented. How do you deal with that?
Well, as far as sharing, I feel like I could do a whole other program on parenting, being the mom of three young children myself. Uh-huh. I feel like we could go in a completely different direction. But I think that there's an understanding that comes both in our children's classes and our adult classes of where people feel commonality and where people feel othered. And in a way, we'll talk about our children's classes because that's where this started. In our children's classes, there is the aspect of children seeing what feels threatening to them and what feels unsafe to them, and when they get the quote "uh-oh" feeling, when they see something that makes them uncomfortable or feel something that makes them uncomfortable, when they see that injustice in other children. And at the same time, we may have a child in there who has built most of the time when we ask the children, have you ever done something mean to someone else? Almost all of them raise their hand. So I think that in educating them in this way, we're actually giving them the opportunity to see it through the other's eyes in both directions. And they realize that they may have been, quote, victim mm-hmm. to being bullied and also may have bullied someone else. So it's education.
I think that's really interesting. I'm going to change the topic for a minute. I think people probably want to know, aside from your website, which you should repeat right now.
www.prepareportland.org.
Thank you. And I want to know, is this expensive?
That's a great question. We actually changed our pricing structure about a year ago, and I love what we've done. So originally, around the country, the class is the basics class, which is a 15 to 25 hour class. We do a smaller class size, so we do 15
hours.
Okay,
so this is an international movement with a
yes.
national presence.
Yes.
Go ahead,
absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and our national presence is much bigger than our international. Israel happens to be a huge chapter that does a lot of great work. But our basics class, which is 15 hours, used to be, around the country, it's $400 to $800. And ours was $495.
Okay.
And because we're at the lower end in Portland. So what we always had available were payment plans and scholarships. And I think I heard about what Panera was doing a few years ago in doing a pay what you want for one, at least one of their meals. And it was an effort to help people who weren't able to pay anything because they would give it away free if they had to. And at the same time, it inspired generosity in people who chose that meal and said, I want to help someone else have this meal. So they would give double what it was worth.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, gosh, I wonder if we can do that with the work that we do, because it is overwhelming just to hear the number $495, even if you know it's going to be...
That's not $4.95.
It's not $4.95.
That's $495. Yeah.
So, you know, even if you know it's going to be $50 over 10 months, that still feels overwhelming to hear that number. And so what I came up with was a pay what you want / what you can program. So for our adult basics class, mm-hmm. everyone pays a $100 deposit. And then at the end of class, they decide what they feel the class is worth and what they can feel they can afford. And what's great about this is it has really given the power back to our students to make the decision for themselves. And it's worked out. People thought I was a little bit nutty when I first decided to do this with the organization, but it's worked out perfectly. I think people have assessed their financial situation accurately and really do pay, because at the end of class, they say, wow, I wish I could pay $2,000 for that. And the people who can afford $500 or $600 say, here you go, and they write a check. And the people who say, that was great, say, I'd like to be involved. So I can't, you know, I can give you $10 more. And then beyond that, I'd love to help you. What can I do to help you get this program out? So it's been fantastic.
So you're earning a living with this voluntary payment system.
Well, I am, you know, thankful to be part of a partnership where we have another income to sustain us as well.
Aha, aha, he said, but, as if he really knew what the hell he was talking about. Aha.
But yes, we are able to keep our organization alive. And the same is true for work with agencies and corporations, because when a business contacts us and they have the funds, so it's not all pay. Uh-huh. That's our basics class. Children's class is for 6-hour class is $150. And again, payment plans are available. And if someone really can't do that, then they talk to us and it's great. And they say, hey, this is where I am right now. But agencies and businesses who can afford it to do private programming for their employees or the people that they work with, then they hire us for that.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7, your FM dial, listener-supported radio, and we're with Leah Nagase, and we're talking about IMPACT, the program, which in Portland is Prepare Portland. That's the best way to contact it. And the whole idea here is, rather than emphasizing some Aikido or Taekwondo or Kung Fu or whatever, is to focus on strengthening one's sense, in terms of skills, one's sense of limit, I think it's fair to say, and appropriateness, and if necessary, to have defensive moves that are appropriate to the situations
yes.
one finds oneself in. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Okay, so, okay, I'm thinking about this for myself.
Let me answer your violence question too, because you said that we may be pushed to using violence ourselves. And one time an instructor from the New York chapter spoke with a monk and said, what do you think of this work and how do you perceive this? And the monk said, basically, when you stop someone from inflicting violence upon you, you are not a part of violence. You are not inflicting violence yourself. You are essentially doing their spirit a favor mm-hmm. by not allowing them to continue that act and perpetrate that act. And I love that perspective.
Well, I actually agree with that. I think that it's just as appropriate to prevent violence toward oneself, especially if you can do it without hurting somebody.
Absolutely.
And it becomes instructive, and it may be helpful to the perpetrator. And they may think, well, what am I doing?
Do you want a good story from the news?
I do.
I mean, how many good stories are there from the news?
So rare.
So rare. So there's a great story that was shared among all of the chapters recently. And this child is not a graduate of our programs. However, she's just an amazing, amazing person. So 12-year-old girl. Wakes up, she shares a room with her sister and wakes up to a man next to her bed. And
ooh, creepy.
Yeah, doing inappropriate things with himself. And he starts, and he has a gun, and he starts to pull the covers back. Mm-hmm. And she looked at him. She, what's funny about this is she remembered something that she had seen on CSI.
You're kidding.
She remembered something she had seen on CSI, and she said, I remember you're not supposed to show fear. So she looked the man in the eye and said, you are not allowed to touch me. Go away. Get out. And he, lo and behold, got up and hung his head and walked out the door.
So he was.
And she said, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, that's good luck more than anything else.
No,
though,
I think
it?
That's skill. I don't think that's good luck. I think it's bad luck that that man entered her bedroom. And I think it's skill that she had to have the calm confidence to look him in the eye. I don't think it's luck at all.
So it's really breaking a I don't like the word cycle, but maybe it is, breaking a set of assumptions that an aggressor will carry with him. Mostly it's him. It's not always, of course. I don't want to stereotype. But the person who's the aggressor suddenly finds themselves confronted with someone who's perfectly competent to set limits.
Mm-hmm.
And that confidence comes from within, I guess.
Yes.
But you're heightening that. You're increasing that awareness of potential ability to resist violence. Is that fair to say?
In that they're in class, they're exploring situations where they're dealing with potentially a physical or sexual assault, and it's those setups. Yes. What we hear back from students time and time and again, which is maybe the best part, is that the bulk of it, yes, they feel comfortable dating or being out in the world and walking alone at night and all that, the things that you hear. Mm-hmm. But people come back and say, gosh, my relationship improved, or I was able to leave an unhealthy relationship. I was able to change a work situation and set good limits with my boss and have a great conversation. We give people the opportunity to explore some of those conversations and learn and get to practice a conversation where they're setting a boundary with someone, and it is someone that they do need to be in relationship with. And then we get emails back and say, hey, you know what? That conversation that we practiced, I did it. I did it in real life, and it was amazing. And the person responded in such and such a way.
I think this is very interesting. I want to remind people you're listening to KBOO 90.7, your FM dial, and we're talking about a real approach, I would say a mindset as well as a physical set of skills called IMPACT, which in Portland is prepareportland.org. And I want to get some of our callers on. The number to call is 231-8187. And who do we have? What?
Kurt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. This is a fascinating conversation. I was inspired to call by your last caller's comment about children now being taught not to share. Now, from a health point of view, strictly, I can see some sort of practicality there. But I was wondering, based upon the popular concepts now of there being no winners or no losers, I was wondering if you are encountering any issues with those philosophies in dealing with teaching the children your concepts. And I will take the response offline.
Okay, thank you for the call.
Thank you. So in response to, are there winners and losers in the world? I mean, it sounded like in the community.
Well, I think, I think you also meant interpersonally as well.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of that, honestly. And I don't know how long it takes for certain parenting philosophies or whatnot to catch on. You know, I've read about the sharing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I read a bit about those things. And a lot of it is the developmental stage of the child. So mm-hmm. a lot of that don't share stuff is don't make your children share. It's not don't share. It's don't make your children share.
Well, don't put them in a situation where they have to talk about something they may not be ready to handle.
I took that as don't share your toy. I didn't take that as don't share.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't share your experience. Absolutely. Share. Children should be talking about their experience at all times.
Mm-hmm.
I took that as don't share your toy. That's the stuff that I've read. So it's really don't make your children share. You see two-year-olds fighting over a toy. You don't say, now, Bobby, share your truck with Susie. It's allow them to come. That's their developmental stage. It's protection of their own belongings.
Well, you know, for a three-year-old, what's mine is mine. What's yours is mine.
Exactly. And they're just not ready. They're not often developmentally ready to think, oh, well, I should do this for that. So as far as the winners and losers thing, again, I feel at least in our classes, the community that comes in the adult classes and the community that comes in the children's classes, I think that they feel more relatable. And this is something I know that Kurt, I believe, asked about the children's classes, but I'm going to skip to the adult classes for a moment, mm-hmm. where when we have men in the class, in the beginning, almost always at the end of class, in our closing circle, a lot of times some of the women will share, I felt really nervous to have a man in class in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And within a couple hours, I felt okay with it. And now I am so happy that they were here. I see that men are a part of this too on the survivor side, that men have these experiences too, and it's different. They're often different experiences, but certainly men as children have been victimized often, and I think again, it's less, the rates that are commonly published are 1 in 7 for young boys for molestation and 1 in 3 for women throughout their lifetime. Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the sexual aspect.
I'm talking about the sexual aspect, exactly. Okay. And then you get into the physical aspect. But they come out feeling a oneness that, oh, we've all been on both ends of this. And like I said, it's different. Certainly, each individual has a different experience, and the genders often have a different experience.
Okay, we have another caller. Who do we have? Joanne, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Joanne.
I have not been listening to the program carefully, and I'm an old person. And I was wondering if the training could help somebody like this in public housing who for years has been experiencing overt and covert harassment and bullying of all kinds and wants to scream and yell at these people but knows that she will be evicted if she does. So I'll listen to you, I guess, off the air.
Okay, I think it's actually, you're raising, you bet, I think she's raising a very important point. And I think I did mean to ask you this. What about older people?
Yeah.
And you know, where bones are brittle, mm-hmm. People are afraid of even falling, let alone being assaulted. How is this appropriate for them? And how does one deal with situations where if one screams and yells, which is a common defense for people who can't deal with things physically, do you work with people like that, and how do you do it?
So, as far as the age question, yes, we absolutely have older students. I think across the country, I mean, I've heard of 84-year-olds being in class. Mm-hmm. Portland, our people tend to skew younger, and I don't know why that is, but it does seem to happen. But we've certainly had students in their 60s. I should have brought my mom. She's 69, and she'll be 70 in the fall. And she always says she speaks for the gray-haired crowd because she took the class originally when she was about 63 mm-hmm. and went on to do all the advanced courses and whatnot, and says this is absolutely for that age. And what I spoke to her about when we actually took the class together with my sister originally, and I said, Mom, I want you to take this class before you get to the stage where, like you said, your bones are brittle and this and that. So are there things that we can do? Absolutely. Are there modifications to be made? Absolutely. Using your words and advocating for yourself, I think, is important. So I think, was it Joanne, her name, who just called?
Yes.
I think she asked about, well, you know, I want to yell at these people, but I'm going to be evicted. So maybe in there lies the potential to advocate for herself in another way. So maybe it's not a direct confrontation with the people who are doing that, but maybe it's advocating for herself with the people who might evict if she does anything. The other part of that is what we call calm confidence. And this is the huge piece. It's not about just feeling ready to scream and yell. Mm-hmm. It's calm confidence. So yes, sometimes people are raising their voices, but it's never in that way that you hear children screaming or teenage girls screaming, that really high-pitched shriek. It's not that. It's calm, and it's using words. And the verbal skills that we teach are varied. And there's no one verbal technique that you would use. Oh, well, if you find yourself in this situation, you use this. Mm-hmm. It's not a prescription. It's giving people tools to put in their toolbox, and then from there they get to make the choices about how they use them.
Well, this actually is, for me, very, very interesting. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial with Leah Nagase and her organization, using a thing called IMPACT, which is not a martial arts program, but a self-defense program that includes verbal skills as well as physical skills. I think that's fair to say.
Yes, and trauma-sensitive and trauma-informed.
And the program here in Portland is prepareportland.org. And I have to do some business, and then we'll go to the phones again. So if you're one of the people calling in, be patient. I gotta tell you what's coming up here on KBOO. At 8 on Veterans Voice Northwest, Vets for Peace interview a pilot suffering from Agent Orange illness caused by planes used to spray Agent Orange during the Vietnam War. At 10, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, author and civil rights activist Kevin Gray talks about the murder trial of George Zimmerman, a very interesting, in terms of your work, a very interesting case. And we'll feature an extended roundtable discussion on the Bradley Manning trial, now that the defense has rested its case. At 1 p.m., At 11 on Digital Divide, host Rabia Yerman has an update on Edward Snowden, NSA whistleblower. You know, the government is trying to put pressure on all the Latin American countries not to let him land there. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear an excerpt from Democracy Now! With journalist Glenn Greenwald. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you're not a member, please go to the KBOO FM website and click on Donate Today. You know, I want to add something to that. We are a station that really is based on the community that listens to us making contributions as generous as they can afford. And let's face it, folks, some of you just aren't stepping up to the plate. So I want to make a personal plea that y'all, 20 to 2,000, 10,000, 1,000 million, gazillion dollars, whatever you can give, it would be really nice.
Gazillion and one is preferable.
I like gazillion and one. Anyway, hopefully you have already contributed. If you haven't, this is the time to do it. All right, let's go back to Leah, and we have a caller, do we not? John, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's Leah, and I didn't catch your name, sir.
Mine? Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Joe.
Joe, Leah and Joe. You know, I'm hearing my own words echoed out of Leah's mouth. Another tool in the toolbox. Different choices. Not everyone that raises their voice is being violent and aggressive.
Right.
Stopping things before they become, before they gain so much momentum that they can't be stopped, or there's adrenaline involved, or things have already been committed. And then why not continue forward?
That's an interesting point. One goes on a trail, I think.
That's right, that's right. And once a trail or a path, and this is something that echoes in my life. I work with people that have suffered from severe trauma or have unique people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing a lot of the same vocabulary. And, you know, when somebody gets off the path, it's so, so difficult to get back on track.
Yeah,
you know, I'm familiar with domestic violence, and and as it relates in a sexual nature, the reaches of this, they go for the rest of a person's life. You know, I have had several women in my life that I have dated, and then come to find out that when they were little girls, they had some issues, and mm-hmm. it doesn't go away. You know,
trauma. You know, trauma imprints pretty strongly on the brain. It's It's part of our survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. This stuff. These people are not. These people are not broken. You know, they've had horrible trauma done to them, and this is a natural reaction mm-hmm. to a horrible situation. So there's nothing wrong with people that have these reactions. It's actually healthy and normal. It's terrible and it's unfortunate. But it wasn't a choice. Most of the time, it wasn't a choice.
Well, yeah.
Especially when people are young and, you know, there's violence involved.
Well, you know, I'm going to just say one thing. I think that all of us have trauma and trash in our brain. And cleaning that up, most of us may not even recognize that it's there, but cleaning it up, if it becomes something that we can become aware of, is very, very valuable. Now, let's not confuse what we're talking about here with deep therapies. Because that's a different structural device, and both can be very useful. Leah, actually, I'm going to invite you to make a comment about this. The caller is bringing up the issue of childhood trauma, particularly sexual trauma. Mm-hmm. How is that relevant to your work?
And how, gosh, yes.
And how is it? And how is it handled?
Yes. So as I started to mention, we are a trauma sensitive and trauma informed agency. So all of our instructors have training on how to handle trauma in the room. Mm-hmm. And we are not therapists. It is not therapy. And yet it is often therapeutic work. So we do not have the same relationship that a therapist and patient would have. But what ends up happening a lot of times is that people are either able to go back to their therapist and deal with things in a new way, or they're able to start therapy and really pursue that. So absolutely, it comes up in class. It is ever present. And I think, again, especially for women, I'll speak for women right now because I am a woman and know my own experience, that the threat of sexual violence, past and present and future, is always with always with us. And so as I was explaining to you before the show, we welcome people wherever they are. So if you have a history of violence and sexual assault in your past, absolutely, we are there for you. If you want to disclose that, you are welcome to. If you want to keep that to yourself, you are welcome to. If you want to come to the class and really enjoy it the whole time, that's fine. If you come want to come to class and you're just there to learn and you find it to be really challenging, that's fine. If you want to share with your classmates, that's fine. And so we don't believe in forcing people into a false therapeutic environment. However, if people are there to heal from things, that absolutely happens too.
I think this is really interesting. I know that there are a lot of martial arts people
mm-hmm.
who for very authentic reasons, mm-hmm. urge people to gain these kinds of skills.
Right.
And I also know that one of the things about any of the real martial arts is that they're really arts that you have to learn.
Right.
It takes a long time
to
become competent to not, for example, break your hand or hurt somebody with more force than you intend. So it's a double-edged sword in that particular context.
Well, and that's exactly it, too, with not hurting people. If you have a sparring partner in a class, you don't want to hurt them because they won't want to spar with you again. So it is learning that how do you give just enough power to deliver a blow that would gain you points in a match, but is not actually going to permanently injure someone. And whatnot. And so in our class, people are able to use 100% of their power when it comes to the physical techniques. And knowing that they have the emotionally supportive environment is a huge piece of it, too. Certainly, there are martial arts dojos and whatnot where they do have a supportive environment and they have supportive instructors. Generally, it can be top down. And this is not to say anything negative about martial arts. It's more about martial arts as self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think martial arts are great. And anything that gets you in touch with your body and gives you some sense of power and control over your body is fantastic. What we do is so different from that, that it ends up being apples and oranges.
Okay. And I think that's important. We have another caller. It's 231-8187. Marla, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Leela, you're doing a super job, and I really do appreciate the information you're giving out today. I'm coming from a different angle on that, and that is there any type of program through yours or other that is in the school system, particularly, say, grammar school? And I pose the question because I was raised in a violent home where a father beat the mother regularly, and as children we were not, but I would step in between trying to stop it as a very young child,
yes.
And of course it's left its little marks on me, although I really have worked hard on getting over that. But is there something where a child goes into your program mm-hmm. through an agency outside of yours, because children aren't going to, speak up. It was a terrible secret. I mean, it was absolutely not spoken about. So is there anything like that for children today? And I doubt a mother would enroll her child in such a thing. I know my mother wasn't, because it's something you don't talk about.
Right. Right. Thank you for sharing, first of all. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your call. And I think that's a great question. And it's something that we face at the end of every class, whether it's the parents of our children's class or it's the adults in our adult classes saying, gosh, this should be everywhere. This should be in the schools. And the short answer is, what else does it always come down to? Funding. And it's absolutely a goal of ours to be a presence in the school. And I think it depends on which organization you're talking about, which chapter around the country. So, for example, our New York sister chapter, they do a ton of work in the schools. However, they're in private schools. They're not in the public schools because funding is cut for arts and PE. So talking about a program like this, it often takes something to bolster a change. It takes something happening where either the administrators, whatever level the financial decisions get made on, say, this is a priority. So in short, I hear you, and it is in our hearts and in our intentions, and it's probably going to take time, and it's definitely going to take money. It takes grants. It takes somebody who cares about all of these messages getting out and empowering the children to advocate for themselves and to speak up about those situations. Like you said, so much of any kind of abuse is surrounded by secrecy. And I suppose at this point, it's my hope that the children and adults who are in our classes then start to open their eyes and see signs. Even if there is a child trying to keep a secret, that they see something and are able to reach out and advocate for that child in a new way.
I hope this helps you. You know, I just want to add here that you're not alone, that your experience is unfortunately pretty common.
Absolutely.
And I wish you luck with where you're at, and hopefully you can benefit, not necessarily by this program, but by insights of your own on this subject. So, anyway, Leah, you know, this is something I don't know nothing.
Yeah,
I don't know nothing about this. And I am kind of a little bit turned on by your suggestion. I mean, it seems kind of an exciting idea that you can create within how many hours would you say?
15 for our basic
study. Yeah, that you can create in people a sense of empowerment and self-confidence. I want to be clear here. This ain't going to teach you how to beat up the guy who weighs 200 pounds and you weigh 150.
Well, wait, hold on.
Wait.
Moment stopping. It depends. Are you talking about beating up as in you become the aggressor? You are spot on. If you talk about the ability to defend yourself against someone much larger than you, then you are spot off. And this is where it comes back to using a person's strengths against an assailant's weaknesses. There are certain parts of our bodies that are always unprotected. And it doesn't matter how big someone is or how strong, how muscular they are always sensitive. Head and groin are the main targets.
Uh-huh.
So that's the thing. We have women who come in and they are 5 feet tall and 90 pounds. And then we have people come in who are 5'10" and 250 pounds. And they are both strong. And they can use their skills because we're not talking about comparing the 90-pound muscles to an assailant who's 175 pounds. And they're upper body muscles. It's really about using the parts of our body that are always strong. Our elbows, our knees, our feet, our legs are strong. And so, you know, that's actually one of the challenges. When I first took my class, somebody said to me, oh, well, if the person was this big and if the person had these skills. And I said, no, because it's not about trying to have a fair fight. It's not about trying to have everybody on your places, get on your mark, get set, go. It's not that. It's about fighting, and when we're talking about physical skills, about fighting for your safety and maybe your life.
Right. I think that is an important point. Leah Nagase is with us today. We're talking about the IMPACT program. You can reach it at prepareportland.org @gmail.com. I do that right?
Prepareportland@gmail.com or www.prepareportland.org.
Okay, great. And we have another caller. George, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe and Leah.
Hello.
I've been quite interested in what you say, and I heard you mention that you have a vigorous chapter in Israel, and that interests me. And it occurred to me to ask, have you undertaken to help people who are Palestinians and Israelis in this very, very ongoing tense situation learn to deal with these issues and make progress? And I'll take my answer, and I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, George.
No, that's a very interesting question. You're extending the issue to a big international difficult situation. What is there any effort to outreach in the two communities?
So since we are affiliates and I'm not actually a part of their ongoing organization, I can only speak to what I've seen them talk about.
Uh-huh.
And their organization is called El Halev. So I'm sure you can Google it and El Halev and IMPACT and find information. And I know they just put out a promotional video that has English subtitles so you can learn more about their work. I do know that they have had classes where they have Israelis and Palestinians in class together, and that I've just heard brief mention of it, that it's the same thing that I was talking about with having people of different ages and different genders and whatnot in our classes, where they say, oh, we are one. We have some shared experience, and I think that was true of their experience as well.
You know, I think this is, I don't want to segue into the Palestine-Israel issue, but this is really something that many Americans don't realize. There are a number of organizations of all kinds attempting to bridge the gap between the two communities, and there's enormous injustices in that region. But it is exciting to think that people are reaching out and trying to work with each other.
Absolutely.
To solve these kinds of problems. And it's a, you know, it's kind of a model that I like, but also it really relates to what you're trying to do, I think,
yeah,
here in Portland. And I'm kind of excited about your program. I
Thank
think it's
you.
Kind of neat. I like the idea that you're not trying to make everybody into a martial artist.
Right.
That what you're really trying to do is create confidence. If I may paraphrase you, and you
yes.
can correct me, that you're trying to make people feel confident and comfortable within themselves, within their bodies, in interaction, in a society where a lot of times people just, without even consciousness, use the force of their will or the force of their physical presence to overwhelm opponents rather than to have an intellectual conversation or a reasoned conversation.
And ultimately, I think we're promoting peace, not just nonviolence, but peace. I honestly feel that we are working to be peacemakers in this world. So I'll just take a minute to encourage anyone who's listening right now to please check out our website, give me a call, send an email, and we would love to have you or your loved ones in class. And certainly, as the one caller pointed out, or asked a question that pointed out, if there's a program that you're excited about, if you'd like to see this in the schools, please, after you've supported KBOO, think about supporting us.
Well, I think it is a good idea, and I really appreciate the time you've taken, and I hope people come away from this with an awareness of other alternatives to dealing with bullies, to dealing with violence in our society. We are, I believe, a violent society, and this is a nice alternative. And I want to thank you, Leah, for coming in and talking about impact and about prepareportland.org.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we're going to have to go now. Thank you all. You stay tuned.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that went nicely.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 9 a.m. Stay tuned next for Northwest Vets for Peace. This morning, Bill and Marvin will be speaking with Wes Carter about Agent Orange, coming up next, right after these announcements.
This is Thomas Lauderdale, here with
Nick Crosa.
We're with Pink Martini, and we'd like to say
Feliz cumpleaños!
And bon anniversaire to KBOO, 45 years old and looking fantastic.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.